You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24/7 home of the black and gold, SNR Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome to The Drive. I'm Dale Lally. He is the Matt Williamson, and we are here in Orlando. We're at the Ritz-Carlton, where the league meetings will take place this these next few days here, Matt. And
things are picking up around here.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy couple of days as well. We'll have some hopefully some guests on here over the next few days. We'll be broadcasting here today, of course, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. The big thing that's going to happen here, Matt, are some of the rule changes that are going to be voted on that the league is looking at, or proposals that they're looking at here. And one of them actually proposed by the Steelers.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, that would
you
be.
You want to dig into those?
We could call this one the Matt Williamson rule because.
Oh, I don't think we will do that.
So the Steelers are one of, I believe it's like six teams that have proposed moving the date of the trade deadline. The trade deadline back. The Steelers have proposed 1 week. Mm-hmm. There's like five other teams have proposed moving it back 2 weeks.
I remember last year it fell on Halloween, you know, so they want to go to 9 or maybe to 10.
The Steelers have proposed 9, which will get you halfway through the season or over the halfway point. The other teams have proposed moving it to 10, week 10.
So the only reason I've heard not to do it is, well, we've never done that before, or it's been like this in the past. Like, I don't know the other leagues as well, but the other three major sports have it well after the 50% mark of the.
They play more games, though, too.
They do, I mean, it's still lowest common denominator. I mean, like, by Halloween, half the teams don't know if they're in or out of it. I mean, I think they should push it back far, push it back a month.
Well, you don't think there should be a trade deadline.
Right. I mean, I don't. I mean, like, if two teams agree on a deal, no one's tanking it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I mean, I think the later the better, almost. Or make it Thanksgiving, at least. I mean, because I think there'll be more action. I mean, when Halloween rolled around last year, half the teams were like, we're one game over, we're one game under, we're at 500. Should we go all in to try to win it this year? Should we sell our dudes?
Here's what the NFL doesn't want.
Because then the injury hits, too.
The NFL does not want to happen is what you're kind of talking about there, where a team tanks the last month of the season and nobody
goes
to the games.
They sell at a fire sale.
Yeah. Nobody goes to the games. Nobody watches them on TV, and it's a bad product. That's what they don't
want to happen. That is worth bringing up. I mean, that's the rule, or that's the reasoning against it, is maybe Washington or Carolina, they have the top two picks. You know, the Patriots were sold all their remaining assets at the very end.
Everything must go.
Yeah. However, that would also drum up even more interest for this time of year. I mean, think of all the picks they would have.
Well, that's great, but that doesn't fill the stadiums when they're, you know, the final month of the season when they're
understood.
Where it doesn't, you know,
but the tickets are probably sold.
The TV product is the big thing.
The TV product would be bad.
Yeah,
right.
It would be awful.
I mean, honestly, there's a lot of games in Week 18 that are bad that there's no way around it.
Well, that's the league doesn't want
if you think about it,
the way it was last year. I mean, going into the last couple weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. Because of the expanded playoffs, 80% of the league was still alive for something.
Right. No, they've done a great job of that,
yeah.
Keeping all these teams very relevant late in the season, which is great. I just don't think the trade deadline needs to be as early as it is, because I just think you're making teams make a decision, are we buyers or sellers, too early.
Well, I mean, it is where it's at now.
I do think it should exist.
It was the halfway point of the season when they were still at 16 games.
Right, right.
Now it's.
I still think that's too early.
Now that things have expanded, now you can go ahead and move it back. I think that one will probably end up getting past either the one game or two games.
I do think it'll get moved.
When you have that many teams proposing this, it's probably going to get changed.
No, that makes sense. I didn't realize the Steelers were the first to propose it, though.
They weren't the first, but they were one of the teams that – I don't know who was first. But
okay.
There was a number of teams.
Because they listed the drive, probably.
Proposed it, yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure.
That was it. That's why I call it the Matt Williamson rule. You know, that's what
first
it was.
One ever come up with that.
Yes. Some other things that they're going to talk about.
This convoluted kickoff thing is crazy. I'm not saying it's wrong, but
we'll
it's crazy. Okay.
All right. So the competition committee wants to allow for enforcement of a major foul by the offense prior to a change of possession in a situation where there are fouls by both teams. So if the offense commits a foul before the change of possession.
Okay.
Because
this is hypothetical,
the way it is now,
right?
if
a holding call before an interception?
Personal foul, major foul.
Oh, major foul.
Yeah.
Okay, like a major hands to the face by your offensive tackle before your quarterback throws a pick.
Yeah.
Okay, as of now, that wouldn't count. That wouldn't tack on to the end of the return, or does it?
Well, they're saying that there's also a foul by the defense on the.
All right, give me an example, please. I'm a little confused.
I'm a little confused by it as well.
Okay. Some of the way they write these things.
Somebody's going to have to explain that one to me a little bit more. But I think what they're saying is that if the offense, let's say there's a
low block or an illegal
chop block or something that's.
Before an interception
happens. Before the interception happens. But while the interception is happening, there's also a
defensive head, hands to the face or something.
Now those would be offsetting. What they're saying is because the offense did it first, I believe then the pick would stand.
I think the pick still stands as it stands today, right?
No, it'd be offsetting.
Offsetting replay down.
Yeah.
Okay.
As I understand
it. Well, I mean, obviously we're a little – unclear on this, but I think if a pick happens and under those circumstances, it should be a change of possession.
Yeah, I think that's what they're saying.
I think that's what they're saying.
That's what they're saying here.
Okay, I'm on board then.
Also by the competition committee. This one's, you see this every once in a while, to include the competition committee to include a ruling of a passer down by contact or out of bounds before throwing a pass as a reviewable play. So you're allowed to then challenge that. Was he at it? You know, because you've seen the one where the guy's along the sidelines and he's throwing the ball and maybe he steps out of bounds.
Mahomes and Allen are always
doing
that tight wire.
Or the guy's down. You can't review that right now.
You should be able to review
what
that.
What they're saying is that would be, you'd be able to review that.
I think there's more examples of that now than Dan Fouts in the pocket.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because the quarterbacks are on the move more.
Yeah, often. It happens.
This is one I think the fans will really like because you hear this one screamed about a lot. This is also by the competition committee. To allow a replay review where there is clear and obvious visual evidence that the game clock expired before the snap.
Oh, okay. That's like the NBA shot clock type thing.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
That should definitely happen.
You should. I wish you could also review if the tackle's left early.
That would be nice. I don't think that's in the cards.
Because that's another one that
they're doing a lot of.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They get that early start on that.
And they let them do a little early start. I mean, there's
a
little bit of a flexibility.
Call that one
there.
The Lane Johnson rule.
Mm-hmm. No, he's good at that. The Kansas City Chief rule.
Yeah. They did it quite a bit. Of course, the big one is to eliminate a potentially dangerous tackling technique, which would be the hip drop tackle.
Yeah. And I don't know if everyone knows what this means. I think they define it there, but it's basically like I jump on your back and I pull all my weight. So
I slide down your body and land on your legs.
And land on your legs with all my weight, like against your back of your calves, basically. So I
for
know
Steeler fans, think the Le'Veon Bell play with Vontaze Burfict along the sidelines. That's how Le'Veon got hurt. That was a hip drop tackle.
So I know a lot of people are like, well, what do you want defenses to do? You already can't hit him in the head. You already can't hit him in the knees. But to me, the playing field is level for everyone. And a problem that we often talk about, an underlying problem in the league, is there's not enough scoring. So if you I think a lot of these type of rules are going to favor the offense. You know, when in doubt, because fantasy football and betting overs and touchdowns are fun and all those type of things. Now, and it is a dangerous play. From what I understand, and I'm not a rugby expert, but if we had rugby experts sitting here, they would be like, I can't believe you didn't disallow this 20 years ago. You know, like, because I think I'm pretty sure that they have disallowed this long ago. You're not allowed to do this in the rugby world because it's dangerous. I mean, it's like a horse collar situation.
Yeah, you're coming down on the back. That's where, I mean, you see so many injuries happen with that. Guys get his ankle gets pinned underneath him, or the knee gets twisted underneath the bodies.
And I feel for linebackers and defensive backs, but the days of Jack Tatum taking her head off are gone, and you know the clotheslines of Lynn Swan and all those type of things. And there would be an adjustment, but the defenders adjust. I mean, there'd be a lot of penalties in the meantime, but they adjust. It takes 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
So that doesn't bother me.
This is another one by the competition committee to expand the crackback prohibition to players who go in motion and move beyond the center to block a defender at or below the knee. Think about that one. Mm. That would probably
a jet motion come
that
back.
That was the T.J. Watt play against Detroit 2 years ago in the preseason.
Yeah.
Where the tight end comes in motion across the formation and goes low
and
on
goes
one.
Low.
Yeah.
I would disallow. I would make that rule change.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
a safety issue.
Yeah, it's not much different than a crackback block, a Hines Ward type block, especially if you go low like that. Yeah, that's a lot to ask an edge defender. Yeah, I would make that change.
And then finally is
the crazy kickoff rule.
Folks, pay
attention because this can get crazy, especially without like a graphic where you tell everyone where they're lined up.
To create a new form of free kick play that is designed to resemble a typical scrimmage play by aligning players on both teams closer together. So what they're saying, I think it's the defense lines up at the – or the team receiving the ball lines up at the 30, I believe.
Okay.
And the defense lines up at the 35. The guys who
– I know they're super close. I was thinking they were 10 yards apart.
Maybe it is 10 yards. Okay. The kicker is back kicking from his 35.
Which I have one glitch with, but we can get to in a minute.
Yeah. And of course,
so there's a 10-man wall and a kicker well behind them.
Yes.
And his whole goal is not to – we can get to this. I'm getting ahead of us. But
okay.
To use a golf term, his whole goal is not just to get the driver out and blast it into the seats
like he
does now. That's what they're trying to avoid. They want kickoffs to matter. So what they want him to do, and they're going to penalize him heavily if he doesn't, is they want him to get the wedge out or the 7-iron.
Yes, place it.
And put it between the 20 and the goal line in bounds. And if you don't – you feel shame and you go to the penalty box. I mean, like, it's bad. You know, I forget what the rules are. And I think almost every NFL kicker could do that.
Yeah.
So there's a couple things. I mean, maybe you could read through the rules a little
bit.
There's a lot to it.
The coverage team set up at the opposing 40 with the receiving team setting up at the 35.
So they're that close. I was thinking it's 10, but it is 5. Okay.
The team kicks the ball from the 35. If the ball is kicked into the end zone in the air, it goes to the 20. If it's kicked into the end zone, they get it at the 35.
Yeah, I think they don't want it going to the end zone.
If it's a touchback, it's at the 35. If it's inside the 20 and rolls into the end zone,
yeah, so there's different
then
rules.
Then you get it at the 20.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
So
they want you to field it,
and they want you to try to return it.
That's all they're looking for here, massive collisions.
What they don't want are the massive guys running 50 yards downfield and taking somebody's head
flipping their head around, things like that. So if you look further in it, there's two things that worry me a little. Is I was thinking they were 10 yards apart, but it's a bigger deal now that's 5 yards apart. So you're the front wall on the return team.
Yes.
Okay? I mean, and what is that, 6, 7, 8 guys, whatever, I should know that off the top of my head. Maybe that would change in a shorter field. Well, those guys aren't allowed to move
until the ball goes over their head. Right?
Well, I think until your player touches it.
Okay.
And there's rules about when you're allowed to leave. I think it's true for the blockers and it's true for the guys that run down, the way I understand it. So what worries me is if I'm 5 yards away from a rookie year James Harrison trying to run down and destroy my return guy, I'm looking backwards first because I got to make sure he touches the ball before. And he's not allowed to leave before then either. So we both leave at the same time. It's like a snap count thing. But it's when my player touches the ball, from what I understand. Which is okay. I mean, it's still 5 yards to react.
Right.
But there would be returns. Here's a real glitch that I think is important. But I've been making jokes about it on my other, you know, networks. If I have a 10-man return team, you know.
Yeah.
And 5 yards ahead of them are my blockers. And I got my kicker way back here, 15 yards behind them. What about on windy days? On windy days, I got to get someone to be Lucy and hold the ball like this.
Right.
Well, he's now 15 yards behind his teammates. You know, like I'm rushing with 9. Or do you
Such is life.
I mean, when do you do everything possible for that ball not to blow off the tee, I guess.
I mean, you have to deal with that when you're kicking it up, you know.
And he's got
to
get up.
Anyways.
I mean,
he's got to get up and run.
It's a disadvantage of the kickoff tee.
Yeah,
but now he's kicking out of the end zone.
Yeah.
I mean, now that you actually have to do something, that holder.
Well, either that or you just kick it high in the air and try to get them to fair catch it inside.
Do you know fair catches still exist?
I would assume so.
I think that rule changed, too. There's a lot to this rule.
Okay.
And I also know that kicking it out of bounds now even hurts you more, I think. So they really want to land it on the green.
Yeah.
Like, the whole goal was here, land it on the green without as much violence and have returners matter.
Yeah.
Which, all that sounds great, but it sounds like if I'm Danny Smith, do I want this to happen?
Well, the interesting thing is,
I need so many more reps.
Does it take the squib kick out of the game?
I think it does. I don't think you're allowed.
You can't squib it up there and hit one of your own guys in the back.
I don't think you're allowed to squib it.
I
think if it lands before the 20-yard line, it's a penalty, too. It's like going in a sand trap. You know, like, they penalize you. I think you have to land it between 20 and 10.
Yeah.
And on a windy day, I guess that's still not hard for an NFL kicker, but I don't know that.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just a lot to it.
Yeah. I mean, they're good.
It would be confusing.
The kickers are much better now than they were 30 years ago. And this is really, I think this came from the XFL.
It does. It does. Yeah, they did
this
exactly.
This is a rule that came from the XFL.
So at least you could see it in practice.
You've seen it work. Okay, that does work. I wonder
if this is a year away from being an NFL
thing. They're only going to do it. I think they're only talking about doing it for a year. So they just want to try it out, which is weird, too.
It is weird because, again, if you're Danny Smith, well, we got to
teach it another way next year.
I mean, even my Killebrews that have been helping me teach the rest of the rookies, he doesn't know what he's doing either.
You know?
And what's the best strategy? I mean, do you want to kick it high? Do you want to kick, I don't know. I mean, do you want to kick it into the corners? But I think you get penalized heavy if it goes out of bounds. There's a lot to it. I mean, so if this rule goes through, I want to investigate it further.
Yeah, and we'll learn more about it as it's talked about and talked through. But that's what they're looking at doing here. We got to get to a break.
He is
the Matt Williamson. I am Dale Lally. You are listening to The Drive on Steelers Nation Radio. We are in Orlando at the NFL Spring Meetings here at the Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah, beautiful.
Nice joint, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Would highly recommend it if you can
Stop by
and get in here. Anyways, let's get to a break. We'll be back with more on The Drive right after this.
Here we go, Steelers! Here we go! This is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24-7 home of the black and gold. SNR. Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dale Lally here with Matt Williamson at the NFL Spring Meetings, and we're pleased to be joined now by our we've done this before a little bit, Rob.
Yeah.
We've got Rob King here with us. He's here with us down in beautiful Orlando.
Are we going to do the keys to the owners meeting?
We're going to do keys to the owners meeting. Actually, what we're going to do here, Rob, is keys to the offseason and what's happened already for the Steelers, and they've been a little busy.
It's hard for me not to be really bullish on what they've done. I mean, I really like – when you think about the team, what they did last year, how they got into the playoffs, winning three games when they got kind of decent quarterback play, right? That had been lacking.
Yeah.
It had been very inconsistent. And now you had a guy with Russell Wilson's resume who, let's face it, that's what they want him to be, a decent quarterback. They're not asking him to, go out and Patrick Mahomes.
And lead Superman.
And win games for you by himself. That excites me, that you could win more games with him at the quarterback position. And then Fields, I think, guys will be, more than your average, second quarterback.
Yeah.
You can kick the tires on him, but you can also get him involved. You can, the average second quarterback standing over the clipboard, well, he could get in goal line situations, short yarded situations, maybe come up with some plays for him. And this isn't, this isn't a guy, running the Wildcat who can't throw the ball, too. So I just think there's a lot of interesting things they can do. I think you start there with the quarterback room being much improved.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it like a better version of Taysom Hill. There's going to be a package for Fields. He's a better passer than a guy like Taysom Hill, but he could come in and run it 10 times in a row if you needed
to. It's kind of like the Ravens did with Lamar Jackson his rookie year.
Early Lamar.
Yeah.
But Fields is even more accomplished and experienced than that.
Oh, yeah. You can actually do more than what they did with Lamar. Lamar didn't throw the ball a lot when they had those early packages in. He was usually there to run something. Mm-hmm. Now you got a guy who can run or pass that you put in there. Even if the Steelers don't do it or don't do it much, if I'm an opposing defensive coordinator, I'm preparing for it.
Absolutely.
Because they can spring it out on they could bring it out on you at any minute.
I mean, and I'm sure Fields is going to get a lot of preseason snaps.
Yeah.
You know, more so than Wilson.
And he's what? I mean, outside of Lamar Jackson, top one or two running quarterbacks?
I think he's better. Yeah.
I mean, just because he's so physical and he breaks tackles.
More than Lamar, you're saying?
More than Lamar. I think he might even win a foot race with Lamar. I don't think he wins a quickness battle with Lamar, a stop-start battle with Lamar. But Lamar's become a little bit more of a pocket passer and is getting up in age, too. I mean, he added a little bit of weight, you know, where Fields is a rocket ship.
Yeah, he's a weapon. And, you know, I think when you look at the team offensively, you know, obviously they have two big holes to fill. And they took care of, I think, a lot of things defensively. We'd bring in Arthur Smith. And you've got, you know, you look at the personnel. And we wring our hands during camp. And how are they going to get Connor Hayward onto the field? How are they going to get – well, they're not. You know, that's really basic is what winds up happening. But I think that they're – He's a real fit for their personnel. That's what it seems like to me. Anyway, you know, hey, let's get a Mike Shanahan disciple. And that would be exciting. But that, now you start to think about, okay, well, we have to revamp maybe the way we do things. And what kind of offensive lineman does he want to block his schemes? And do we have the right personnel? Is this going to be now another 2 or 3 years to put together the guys we want personnel-wise? Maybe it wouldn't be quite that of an exaggerated process. But this guy comes in who I think, Arthur Smith, really fits what you already have. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a bonus.
See, I think it's almost as exciting, not exciting, but as interesting to talk about the new guys. And there's more to come on offense. But also the ones you shipped out. You know, like Deontay Johnson's contract was expiring. He's not much of a blocker.
Right.
They're also not going to play as much 11 personnel as they did in the past. I mean, Atlanta was the bottom of the league, so maybe receiver's not as much of a priority.
Some of that, too, somebody tweeted this to me on social media, on X, I should say. Did you say they X'd me?
That's a good point.
X'd me. Yeah. Anyways,
very final. You
know, Arthur Smith, they've never had – the Steelers really need a number two receiver because Arthur Smith's never really used one. I'm like, if you look back at his years in Tennessee – when they had Corey Davis and A.J. Brown, Corey Davis and A.J.
Really
Brown's numbers weren't that much different
right.
in terms of catches.
Right.
Obviously, A.J. Brown was the better player and got more yards, you know, per catch and things of that nature.
I think the Steelers' 11 personnel will definitely shrink.
Yeah.
But I don't
They'll
think
be
they'll be last in the
yeah.
league
no,
by any stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, I do
they won't be in the top, but they're not going to be the last.
I do think Smith's done a good job in Atlanta and back to Tennessee with – these are your ingredients.
Yes.
Build from there.
Painting the barn red with red paint.
If you've Derrick Henry, you know, there you go. I
mean, no, that's a good point. Yeah. Right. And, yeah, it's a hole. I mean, we can't fool ourselves into thinking that's not a hole. You've got a hole there.
Yeah.
I think they need two receivers.
You know, when I think that's probably right. You'd like to, certainly. Maybe maybe trade for one or sign one and then draft
a veteran
one.
And a mid-round
maybe,
pick.
Yeah, or, maybe a guy you could bring along. You know, going back and doing some research on the beginning of the Chuck Knoll years and what he did – you know, he got rid of Roy Jefferson, who was their best receiver, because he just, you know, whether it's personality or scheme-wise, he just didn't fit. And I'm not sure whether the Steelers will tell us, hey, you know, Deontay Johnson, we want somebody with a better blocking profile, and therefore doesn't quite fit what we want. So it makes him a little more expendable than you think. When you look at that trade and you're like, well, you know, could they have gotten more, done more? Well, maybe they just wanted to, you know, they know they've got to move on from that position because he doesn't fit in with what they do. Now, I don't know whether that was the determining factor, but I'd be a little surprised if it wasn't maybe at least involved in their thought process. Hey, we want somebody who's going to be more physical. I mean, you look at, you know, you watch the 49ers play, and you watch Samuel and Ayuk.
They block. Oh,
I mean, those guys are blocking.
Yeah, they get after
you know?
It, yeah.
They get, and of course, they receive as well.
The Falcons guys block, too.
Right.
You know, Lundin, and they're big body guys, and right.
Yeah, so, you know, I think when you look at things defensively, they've gotten younger.
Mm-hmm.
Which they needed to do on the defensive side. Yeah, that had to be a priority. We talked about it when the signing of Patrick Queen, we didn't think that was going to be possible. Didn't even consider that.
Yep.
Like, I didn't think they would be in that market, but the price, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be either. And so you get a guy, you know, at a relatively team-friendly deal for what those guys are going for in the open market, who's still 25 and an ascending player.
You have playmakers really at every level of your defense. You know, Benton is a developing guy. Cam Hayward, I think, is going to, you know, maybe he's got one, you know, bounce back season, a little health for him. But, you know, the two guys on the outside are obviously dynamic. You have Minkah Fitzpatrick and Joey Porter Jr. on the back end. You know, Queen really, you know, fills that hole in the middle. He'll have whoever lines up next to him, I think he's going to have – you know, that trickle down sort of salubrious effect that great players have on other players next to them.
Words.
Sorry. Sorry about that. But they have that sort of effect on players. You know, they make the player next to them better.
Yeah.
And, you know, the really interesting question, and I'm going to have the opportunity to interview Omar Khan, I think it's tomorrow, that I'd love to know is, how do you kind of get, how do you bore down to the value of that player and take aside all the other things around him? Because let's face it, you know, Patrick Queen was scuffling a little bit. Roquan Smith came in, and then Queen ascended. So how much of that is the arrival of Roquan Smith? Matt's done great work on inside linebackers and how long it takes them to develop and play. So was he at that natural progression point already?
Right.
So
how do you, we don't know. Yeah,
yeah, how yeah. do you take aside all the outside factors? Ravens have a very good defense. How do you take aside all those outside factors and determine this is going to be the guy? I mean, you know, you can always raise a red flag if you want to, but to me, I think it's a great signing.
You know, if you look at it, Roquan Smith, the aforementioned Roquan Smith, really his first 3 years in the league were kind of
stumbled and he didn't live up to top 10.
Year four, he finally started to get it, and then year five is when he gets traded to the Ravens. You could point to that. Almost not every player, not every inside linebacker across the league, but there's a lot of them you can look at that it takes them 3 or 4 years because so much is thrown at them.
It's a really hard position
cerebrally
now. I mean, like Shanahan manipulates you with all this motion and stuff that you never saw in the Big 12. And the speed of the game's faster. You're taking on better guards. You're trying to run with tight ends and running backs that are legit receivers. Drafting running the linebackers high is bad business, but signing them is not.
Yeah.
That's a great summation. A great summation. And he also helps them. You know, you talked about younger. They need to get younger. They need to get faster. You know, and you look at I've always liked Deshaun Elliott. I've always thought he was just a good, solid football player. I don't know a ton about Dante Jackson other than the fact that he can fly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see a guy like that and you think maybe slot guy, but I think he's been more of an outside guy.
He's been outside pretty much his entire career, yeah.
So, I mean, there's still work to be done. But certainly a lot less on defense to me. And we'll see when Holcomb comes back. But Landon Roberts, I thought, you know, you talk about a surprise in a season in which you're sifting through all those injuries at inside linebacker. I thought Landon Roberts showed up a lot better. You know, he's a two-down guy. Well, okay, maybe ideally, but I thought he showed up pretty well in a lot of three-down scenarios for him. So, you know, somebody's misfortune was his gain. And if you get Holcomb back, I think you feel pretty good. Man, I mean – Herbig to back you up at the outside linebacker position. You bring Adams back, and you have that depth along the defensive line, an ascending player in Benton. You know, it's hard for me not to be bullish on what they've done. Did they have to grab a corner? Sure. Could they do that early in the draft? You know, if the guy's there, maybe you do.
So you mentioned team speed, and I think that's an underreported thing that's happened this offseason. Is the back seven, to me, even on their best day, when everybody was healthy, let alone at the end of the year when they're on backup safeties and linebackers and pulling dudes off the street. But, I mean, Queen's a 4-4 guy.
Right.
Jackson's a 4-2-9 guy.
You know? Right.
But with all respect to Wallace and Peterson and the slot situation and the linebackers, their back seven was amongst the slowest in the league.
Yes.
And they've clearly addressed that. And I don't think people are catching on to that enough.
Yeah, and Elliott's not a burner, but he runs well enough. He runs better than I think what they had back there. Yeah.
Especially for an in-the-box guy.
Right, because we know Minka can run.
That. Right.
You know, and I totally agree. I thought the team speed was something that needed to be addressed. And, you know, one of the great things that I think the Steelers have done, going back to Kevin Colbert and, you know, continuing now with Omar Khan, is go into the draft with at least the plausibility that several positions are open for you to draft. I mean, teams always say, we're going to take the best player available. Well, no, you're not.
No, you're not.
You're going to take the best receiver available or the best quarterback available if you need
There's
that.
Three positions.
I always said it's the best player available at a position of need.
Yes, at a position of need. But I think what the Steelers do is they shrink. They at least give you the plausibility that, hey, we can go into camp and say, Herbig and Anderson, you guys are battling it out for the center.
Say that the day before the draft, if the Steelers had to line up and play a game, they would be able to do so with NFL
could
guys.
Field a team.
Absolutely.
They could field a team of 22 that had NFL-capable players at every position. You might be able to overdraft that, but they have the capable guys.
But I would say, as we stand at the owners' meeting, I bet there's people watching saying, I don't see a second receiver.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure those are legitimate center options for a real.
For sure.
And so I agree with all that, and I think that's definitely a Colbert thing.
We're not done yet.
I think another receiver is going to drop.
Another month to go here before we get to the draft.
I think that would be the big one, to be able to take that off the board and say, okay, we don't really need a receiver. We certainly don't need one high. But again, you know, let's say, you know, you're going to draft and Powers Johnson, right, the center that, you know, maybe you're eyeing him, but if somebody takes him, you like a tackle. Okay. Well,
you never mind
taking a tackle, or, hey, there's a receiver that's really undervalued. I don't know if you'd go there in the first round, but, maybe there's one defensive lineman you like. Maybe there's a corner at that position. So I just think that they've kept themselves open to be able to, as close as you can, take the best player available, because you'll have maybe five different positions you could, I think, ostensibly choose from.
Yeah, and the way it looks right now, they have five pretty high, substantial picks, and I see like four needs there. So that gives you some flexibility as well. So we mentioned Omar, and he obviously has a strong salary cap background. I mean, that's where his bread was buttered originally, and you can see it in all his moves since he's been in charge. So it's the value to me has been terrific. Like we talked about before, I'm not interested in Patrick Queen. He's going to make $18 million a year. Well, at 12 or 13, I'm really interested.
Right.
I'm not interested in Justin Fields for a second-round pick. But for a future sixth or fourth, sign me up. That's wonderful, but I'm just playing devil's advocate here. If you buy a lot of nickel players for 3 cents, that's tremendous, but you'd still need some dollar guys too.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like somebody needs to hit out of the group. And I'm confident that they will.
I think you get your dollar guys. That's where those are the guys you draft.
That's Broderick
ideally,
Jones.
Yeah.
That's your next year's first.
Yeah.
You know, that's Benton. You know, right.
And Joey Porter Jr.
Hopefully they're on rookie deals.
Yeah, right.
Eventually you could give a quarterback $50 million if you have to or whatever, right.
Well, when you think back about you know, the guys the Steelers have gotten over the years, and they're a draft and develop team, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the guys that the valuable guys, whether it's, you know, Kimo von Ohlhoff and, you know, James Ferrier obviously wound up being a great grab. Ryan Clark. Some of these guys that they've taken over the years, I think like a Deshaun Elliott kind of fits that mold for me. Like, I think he's going to be a good, solid player. Queen is – that's different than what we've seen them do traditionally.
Yeah.
You know?
You're right.
I mean,
that could be a home run.
Yeah,
you know I mean?
that's a dollar player that you got for 92 cents, right?
Exactly. So yeah, that's the kind of risk I like.
And that's been a position that inside linebacker position that they've just, for whatever reason, they've tried to draft them. They've tried to go for the nickel players to make it work. You know, now they're finally, you know, they finally spent the money on a guy who is an ascending player that I'm not going to say he's Ryan Shazier, but he's Ryan Shazier like.
He's in the same neighborhood, or trending that direction at least. And,
I mean,
and he's really young, and he's really durable.
And I think if you get Holcomb back, and he's healthy and overcomes that severe injury and comes back to being, I thought he was really impressive, especially you know just before he got hurt. I mean, he started out
really
okay, and then he looked good, and he can run, and Queen can run. You know, you talk about the speed and the back seven. Both those guys will be able to add to that. Again, it's. You know, I'm just bullish on what they've done. I think right now, you know, projecting out a little bit on, okay, I think they'll go get another receiver. They do have a little bit of a salary cap room. They've got good high draft choices. I just think they're a much better. We're going to finish the draft. We're going to be, you know, heading into that rookie mini camp in the second weekend of May, and we're going to say this is a better team, a substantially better team than the one that walked off the field after a first-round playoff loss in Buffalo. I really believe that. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, they still have to finish things off, but I think it's a great, great start.
They built the base.
Yeah. They have.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the quarterback position real quick because I'm not picking on Kenny Pickett, but he has 13 career touchdown passes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Russell Wilson doubled that even not playing the last two games of the season. Last year on what people thought was not a great year in Denver, he doubled that. You know, I mean, you're going to get so many more big plays from the quarterback position. But you're going to get a lot more negatives, too. You're going to get sacks. You're going to get interceptions. I mean, Kenny valued the football really well. You know, Rudolph did for his stretch. I mean, that was obviously emphasized here. So I'm really excited about wholesale changes in the quarterback room. I think it's better. I think they have to get big plays out of that position. But there's going to be negatives, too. I mean, it's not going to be all rosy.
Yeah, I think that the big hidden numbers there for me are the sacks taken.
Yeah.
You know, the fumbles.
Fumbles that go with
right?
it.
I mean, yeah. it's so easy to look at a guy's quarterback and, you know, it's funny. Do they include fumbles in a quarterback rating?
They do not.
They do not, right. No. So now you're looking at, okay, hey, I threw 26 touchdowns or whatever, and he had 8 interceptions. Oh, great ratio. Well, let's start thinking. Put those fumbles in, those sacks in.
They do a quarterback index every week on NFL.com, and as they rank the quarterbacks, whoever does it, I think it's Adam Rank last year, whoever did it last year, I can't remember. And one of the things they put in there is their touchdown passes, passer rating, interceptions, all that stuff. But they also include the fumbles. And I always make a note to mention that, like, when you're talking about the quarterback, sacks and fumbles matter.
Mm-hmm. They absolutely do.
Either as a runner downfield or in the pocket, not protecting
those
the ball.
Those are negative plays that
I expect more negative plays from the quarterback position. But
right.
I hope the big plays greatly over.
Everything balances out to the positive.
Right.
That.
You know, and it's interesting to me to try to, you know, we all want to get at the truth, and that's what the statisticians and, the sabermetrics starting in baseball and moving on to all the different sports, the Corsi ratings and hockey and all these different things. But it's really, really difficult. To me, football is the ultimate team game. I mean, I tell this to people all the time. I was working in St. Louis when the Rams traded Bettis to Pittsburgh because they thought he was washed up. Oh, that wear and tear he had in college. And, he's just taking so many hits. Well, then he's trotting into Canton, So it really – and I remember there was a press conference and, the coach, Rich Brooks, said, hey, I told Jerome, if there's not a hole there, I just want you to slam it up in there. And then Jerome came. He was the next guy at the microphone. And somebody asked him, he goes, what does that mean? Am I supposed to run into the back of my offensive lineman? I mean, what does slamming up in there mean? What does that even mean? So you have to have linemen to open holes. You have to have – but in the quarterback position – what are you being asked to do?
Right, that's the thing.
Is your offensive line good? Did the rookie right guard collapse on the nose tackle and miss the, Patrick Queen coming in the blitz, and now there's nothing you can do about that. So it's really, really hard to parse that out. But I think there's enough in the career of Russell Wilson where you'd want you could look at it and say, hey, those sack totals, they need to come down.
They're real.
I mean,
it's been year after year after year thing.
And to me, those fumbles are almost always related to that, right? Like, that's when, you're getting hit as a quarterback, and that's when the ball's coming out, obviously.
Because he's got huge hands. I mean, if you look at his hands.
I thought we were done with it. We were talking hand size.
I'm just saying.
365 years ago.
I'm watching him at his press conference last week, and he's talking, and I'm like.
He's over 10 inches.
He looks like
crazy,
he has two catcher's mitts on the end of his arms. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. I had to go measure up. Did you measure up when you heard the.
Yeah, I forget what my number was. I came in at 6.027 on the height chart, but I think I was just over 9-inch hands.
Okay, yeah. I had plenty big enough.
You played quarterback.
I had plenty big enough. Yeah, and I went in. My problem was throwing it to the wrong color jerseys. That was my problem.
So you're colorblind.
It wasn't fumbling. It was colorblind. That was my issue.
I've never heard that about a quarterback. They're colorblind.
I didn't care who caught it. I just wanted somebody to catch it. I just wanted to
hit
it.
You hated incompletions. You did not want incompletions.
Don't let it hit the ball. Don't let it ground. Yeah.
Well, we got to get going here. We'll let you go, Rob. Our guest has been Rob King here on Steelers Radio Network here on The Drive as we're here at the.
Fun to be reunited with you guys.
Absolutely, dude.
Thank you.
All right.
We'll do it again sometime.
Maybe tomorrow. I'll be around.
Be here all week.
Try, I have the veal. Anyway, we're going to take a break. We are live from the NFL spring meetings here at the Ritz-Carlton in Orlando. We'll be back with more in a drive right after this.
Here we go, Steelers! Here we go!
This is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24-7 home of the black and gold. SNR. Steelers Nation Radio.
Steelers fans, you can gear up with the latest sideline apparel, hats, or jerseys of your favorite players, authentic memorabilia, custom items, and exclusives you can find only directly from the team at the official Steelers Pro Shops located at Eckersher Stadium, Grove City Premium Outlets, or Tanger Outlets, or you can visit online at shop.steelers.com. And you might want to go out and get some of those. You might want to get a Patrick Queen jersey.
Queen jersey, Wilson jersey, Fields jersey, all kinds of new ones to pick. Yep, we got some draft picks on the way.
Got some draft picks on the way. I saw Joey Porter Jr. Jersey in the airport yesterday.
Oh, really? Okay.
I hadn't seen too many of those yet. I saw Porter, and I'm like, is that his dad? No, that's Joey Porter
Jr. Junior, huh?
That's
nice.
Junior. So,
more of those will be popping up.
Absolutely. Speaking of which, so Matt Miller has dropped his, after some of the pro days now, mm-hmm. on ESPN has dropped some of his an updated top 50 prospect ranking. And he does his a little bit differently because he does comps, pro comps with these guys.
Yeah, and comps are tricky. Like, I'm terrible at them, to be honest with you. I get a real kick out of people like, you know, I heard this one the other day. He's like, he's a faster Larry Fitzgerald. he's a 6'3 Steve Smith. You know, he's a little bit better Jim Brown. You know, like, relax, guys, you know. But I do think Miller does a better job of – people don't want to hear, like – I heard this one the other day. Polk, the wide receiver from Washington, is a lot like Robert Woods. Okay, it's a quality player.
Yeah, you know, right.
He's not a Hall of Famer, plus 3 inches and minus, you know, 2/10 of his 40.
You know what I mean? What, like, you don't want is to hear Caleb Williams is like Jamarcus Russell.
Right.
That's you don't want that comp.
But at least, you know, put me in the neighborhood. You know, who do they play like, you know,
so
stylistically?
He has Caleb Williams one, and his comp is Aaron Rodgers on Caleb Williams. I haven't seen that one yet.
No, I haven't either. I hear Kyler a lot, and I hear Mahomes a lot.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, Mahomes is too rich. My first overall pick should be better than Kyler.
Well, right. You know, Kyler was the first overall pick.
Right,
yeah.
Right. People were pretty safe about him a couple years
ago. Marvin Harrison Jr. is his number two pick, and his comp is A.J. Green.
That's the one I heard is a faster version of Larry. I'm like, well, that's probably like the best player ever.
Yeah. Receiver that catches everything but fast.
But fast,
yeah.
And has, yeah, ridiculous ball skills, et cetera, right.
So he hasn't worked out at all.
I know.
In this process. With the two other receivers at the top of this draft.
It's a little bit playing with fire.
Yeah.
It's not most years. Because, I mean, Neighbors and Odunze would be first receivers taken often.
Often,
you know,
yeah.
Often. I still think Marvin's probably getting good enough advice and probably will be the first receiver off the board. But he's flirting with it a little more than I would be comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. He actually has Rome Odunze third on his list, and his comp is Ja'Marr Chase on Odunze.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
I don't see that comp.
I don't see the comparison there. But, I mean, I think my hunch is he's thinking do it all, good after the catch, physical. I don't think he's quite as abrupt or as sudden as – Chase was out of his breaks.
Yeah.
A little bit bigger, though.
He's bigger.
A little bit taller, yeah.
Yeah, much bigger, actually.
Yeah.
Four, he has Neighbors. That's what I'm saying with those three receivers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're close.
Yeah, especially if you're not putting position value on it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're elite prospects.
And Neighbors' comp is Stephon Diggs.
I may even say more explosive.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not many that I would put in Neighbors' category of explosiveness. Diggs, though, I mean – I'm not taking anything away from Neighbors. This is just good coaching. They do a lot of scheme things to get him free, where Diggs, especially on his best day.
He's a great route runner.
Just line up against a corner and beat him. You know what I mean? Like, one-on-one.
Five, he has Jaden Daniels.
Okay.
I agree with that. I have Daniels as my number two quarterback. And
yeah, I know you did.
Really close.
He was mine, too.
Yeah.
I have him kind of tied with May right now. This isn't fair to him. But I wonder if you would take Drake May and plop him in LSU last year, or
which I understand
Caleb Williams and drop him in LSU last year.
Here's my thing about, and his comp, and this is why I have Daniels where he's at, and this is a great comp for him. I have his comp is Lamar Jackson with him. I think his running is pretty darn good.
It's really strong.
Yeah.
I do think Lamar at that age was a better runner, but they're in the same plane, the same neighborhood.
Yeah.
And he's a good thrower. I mean, he throws guys open. You know, he does some good things. Great things, yeah.
Six, he has Joe Alt. And the comp is Andrew Thomas.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. Thomas is a little more physically imposing.
Yeah.
You know, just of moving his man stronger, powerful. Alt's a great technician and a really good athlete, you know.
At seven is Dallas Turner.
Okay.
And
that's rich for me.
The comp is Josh Allen. Well, if he's Josh Allen, then you would take.
You're talking about
the Jacksonville.
That's a good one.
Edge rusher, yeah.
A little more finesse than power.
Yeah.
But I think power plays at the next level. I wouldn't have Turner that high.
He has Terrion Arnold at eight, and the comp is Devin Witherspoon.
Feisty, tough. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind that comp. Yeah.
At nine is Drake May, and his comp is Justin Herbert.
It's kind of an obvious one. Physical traits are similar.
Very similar, yeah.
Yeah, and had a semi-rough last year.
And if you remember, I mean, a lot of people weren't super high on Herbert coming out.
Oh no! I mean, Tua went ahead of him.
Yeah,
and, you know, they felt like he was.
And
a
nobody,
little
nobody blinked an eye when Tua went ahead of Herbert.
Not at all.
Now
at
they
all.
Say, "Oh, how can they take Tua ahead of Herbert?" Yeah. Well, that's where everybody had them ranked. At
Oregon didn't use them particularly well.
Yeah, yeah. Brock Bowers 10. And he still has the comp is George Kittle.
I don't say I don't know who my comp would be with Bowers. I mean, because Kittle's a killer in the run.
Oh, game. He's tremendous.
Bowers' effort's great and all that, but he's not as physical.
He's not
as
that
Kittle.
Guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you remember when Kittle came out, he was considered a blocking tight end, and then he goes out to his pro day and runs like a 4.5.
I say I think Kittle in a straight line with the football in his hands beats Bowers in a race too.
Yeah, he has Olu Fashanu at 11, and the comp is Teron Armstead.
Good one.
Yeah,
I mean, really good pass protector, light on his feet, a lot of natural tools.
12 is Talisi Fuaga. The comp is Darnell Wright.
Okay. Recent one, obviously. Pure right tackle, run behind him guy, yeah.
Byron Murphy at 13. The comp is Justin Madubuike.
Good one.
I see that
I'm
one.
I'm fine with that, yeah. Similar body types. Yeah, they got a lot of common traits.
At 14, Jared Verse. The comp is Trey Hendrickson.
Okay. More of a power player than a dip and rip guy or a get low to the ground guy. I mean, he's power first.
15 is Quinyon Mitchell, and the comp is Jalen Johnson.
Length
and speed. And,
yeah, okay.
16 is Troy Fatanu, and the comp is Peter Skoronski.
That's a good one.
It's a good comp, but he's got longer arms.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he can play tackle.
Yes. This time we were pretty convinced Skoronski's not a tackle.
Yeah.
And he never even got an opportunity on a really bad line.
Yeah.
Where I think Fatanu will.
17 is Brian Thomas, and the comp is T. Higgins.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I mean, a little less refined.
This is where, at 18... He has a Donnie Mitchell, and the comp is George Pickens.
I see that.
Yeah.
And this isn't a knock on Pickens. This is Pickens as a prospect. Had a lot of questions, had a lot of inconsistencies, but had remarkable talent.
Yeah.
Mitchell, to me, I'm not saying – because Pickens never had an effort issue. Mitchell runs a lot of routes at, like, half speed and disappears at times. And I don't know what he's being taught to do. But his highlight—if you watch his highlight tape—you think he's.
You think he should go number one, yeah.
Right, right, right. But there's a lot of, why did you run your route this way? Type of question.
He moved him. He had him at 30 on his original board. He moved him up to 18 after he saw him run a 4.33 at the combine.
So we haven't talked about this on the air, but if receivers their glaring number one need come draft day, you know, like, both of us have said Thomas would fit the bill.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm on board or not. I've gone back and forth in the back of my head on that. Like, if receiver almost has to be the pick, you know, hypothetically, which I don't think they'll set themselves up that way.
Right, yeah.
Would you be comfortable with him at 20 or 22, 23? Maybe.
Maybe.
But I'd really have to sit down with the kid.
I'd have to see who else is available you know, see what, you know, how this is going to break. 19, he has Leitu, the edge rusher out of UCLA, and the comp is Matthew Judon.
That's a good one.
It's a good comp. I like
physical,
that one.
Physical, nasty, not super high ceiling athletically.
Yeah. This one is super interesting. At 20, as his number three cornerback, he has Enos Rakestraw, and the comp is Tre'Davious White.
Okay, a little undersized, really good
but
technician, tough.
Yeah.
That's early for Rakestraw for me. I mean, like, I'm going to put him ahead of J.C. Latham or, you know, some of the guys we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, Latham's still not.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's one that popped up that's not up there yet.
21, he has Tyler Guyton, and the comp is Lane Johnson.
Oh, I think that's a great comp. I mean, fast, straight line, Oklahoma, lean, great body type. Lane was rare coming out. I mean,
but is your number three tackle, four tackle?
Well, that's a little early for me, too.
Yeah.
But
you
know, I like the comparison. Lane Johnson's a Hall of Famer, though,
Hall of Famer. I mean, comping the guy to the Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
22 is J.J. McCarthy. The comp is Jake Plummer.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, it's not a flattering one, but they all shouldn't be Hall of Fame comparisons.
Jake Plummer started a lot of games in the league.
I think he was an early second-round pick.
Yeah. Jake Plummer took the Broncos to an AFC championship. The Steelers beat them, but...
Certainly had the grittiness and the toughness that you talk about with McCarthy.
23 is J.C. Latham, and the comp is Juwan Taylor.
Okay. I mean, I think his ceiling's higher than Taylor. I think he's more gifted.
You hope he's a more natural player than...
But, I mean, Taylor got big money just a year ago from the Chiefs. And, you know, didn't have a great year.
24 is Amarius Mims, and the comp is Cam Robinson.
I don't know how you comp that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks different than everybody else, but he has no experience.
Yeah, just hasn't played.
Yeah.
And then 25, he has Ladd McConkey, And the comp is Tyler Boyd.
Faster, though. We actually talked about that
one. A much faster version. He ran a 4.39 at the combine. Tyler Boyd was a 4.6 guy.
Mm-hmm. I think Boyd's the better blocker. I think McConkey can win on the outside more than Boyd could, too.
Yeah.
You know, because of the speed.
Because of the speed.
The outside releases, and, you know, right.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of Ladd McConkey.
Mm-hmm. No, I am, too.
Absolutely. Let's take a break here. We'll finish off this list when we come back. He is Matt Williamson. I'm Dale Lally. You're listening to The Drive here on Steelers Nation Radio. And, well, we are live here at the NFL spring meetings here in Orlando at the Ritz-Carlton. We'll be here Monday as well, Tuesday, Wednesday, and doing shows here.
Yeah, yeah.
You can hear us
every
day.
We'll good environment.
Get some guests on. We, of course, had Rob King on here in the first hour as well. But we'll be back with hour number two of The Drive right after this.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.